Well, there's something upside down about Christmas. I spoke, I think it was last Sunday, about Rudolph. I don't know if the kids, have you heard of Rudolph? It's like a, is it a dog or what is that? Rudolph the snowman? Reindeer. Yeah, Rudolph the red-nosed reindeer. Yeah, people thought that or Santa didn't have a use for him, and he wasn't allowed to play in any of the games. And he had a weakness. He had that big bright nose. It was kind of obnoxious. And then whenever there was a storm, Rudolph was useful. Rudolph was needed. Things changed. Things were turned upside down. When you think about, there's another story about, the Christmas Carol. There's a mean guy. I can't remember his name. Does any of you kids know the mean guy in that Christmas story? That had lots of money. The Scrooge. Yeah, that's not a kid, but thank you. So Scrooge, he was brought to his knees by the Christmas ghost, the ghost of Christmas past and present and future. And man, that was something. And then there was this guy named Bob Cratchit who really had a kind of a tough life, but he found joy. In spite of that, things were turned upside down. There's the Grinch. He stole everything. He stole the presents and the decorations and the food, and there was nothing left to celebrate. Yet people woke up, and they were singing. Things changed. Things looked different. They looked one way. When I say that they were turned upside down, it looked one way, but then it became something else. Charlie Brown, you remember the Christmas tree, that big, amazing Christmas tree? No, it was kind of little and didn't really look that good. But in that story, he's not really into the whole holiday season, and yet his friend Linus and the Christmas story in Luke chapter 2 reminds him of the meaning of Christmas. And Christmas just changes things. We shouldn't be surprised at that. It's always been that way. And so we're going to discover today the birth of Jesus Christ is the most upside-down event up to that point. Probably the resurrection was even more upside-down, but the most upside-down act in human history. For anyone who's been reading along, we've been going through the New Testament reading plan, and we're in Revelation, and I've tried to stick with that as much as possible. But today, probably 2 months ago, I knew I was going to preach out of Revelation 17, and I decided the main idea and the bottom line, and then I started to think about, this morning. So it has a lot of symbols, the Old Testament prophecies, and specifically Daniel and the Book of Rome, and there's just a lot of things in there that are, it's just hard to understand some of it. But the other part is it can be pretty graphic, and since this is an all-family service, all the kids are in here today, I thought it would be a little more beneficial to take a little detour and kind of move around it. And so I still am going to stay in Revelation a little bit, but we're just going to look at one verse in chapter 17, and it's verse 8. I think that'll help kids and adults to understand this a little better. But Revelation, the book of Revelation, when we started out, we got to see who Jesus was. And it was helpful to see how Jesus revealed himself to John in a way that looked like he'd never looked before, at least to him. Never seen him that way. And then you get to the chapter, the books, chapters 2 and 3. We read about the seven churches in Revelation, and all of us would easily look and say, well, that's our church right now, or that used to be our church, or we've never had that problem, but maybe that church kind of looks like that. It was just easy to compare it. Well, then you get later into the book of Revelation, and there's these two cities that continue to be mentioned over and over, and it's Babylon and the New Jerusalem. And Babylon is like the city. It's not really about the city itself. It's the people who are moving away from God. It's the people who are maybe worshiping things they shouldn't be worshiping. It's called, that word's idolatry. And then there's the New Jerusalem, which is mostly in chapters 21 and 22, which is the people who are moving towards God. It represents God's goodness and his glory. And we have to answer the question then of which city we'll live in. And that's an easy question. Kids and adults could answer. Would you rather live in a city that is moving towards God and worshiping God, or a place that's evil? Obviously, we'd choose the New Jerusalem. But it's just not that easy, because people have been deceived over and over since the beginning of time, since the first people, Adam and Eve, we see in Genesis that they were deceived by Satan through the serpent. So I'm gonna read Revelation 17, just verse 8. And we're going to talk about this a little bit more. It says this: "The beast which you saw once was, now is not, and yet will come out of the abyss and go to its destruction. The inhabitants of the earth, whose names have not been written in the book of life from the creation of the world, will be astonished when they see the beast, because it once was, now is not, yet will come." There's a lot there. The biggest thing there is these people who lived a certain way, they realized when it came time, judgment day, when it was time to decide if they were going to heaven or not, they were astonished that their name wasn't in the book. That's a little bit scary. But it was because they were deceived. What they saw was, they thought was good, it wasn't good. What they thought was bad, maybe was actually good. They just didn't see it right. So their eyes were opened, and that's the name Revelation, the book. It was revealed to them. People give life and power to Babylon's values. We don't think we do, but the rise and falls of empires, the empire, a certain civilization or culture or empire or country, it rises to power, and then whatever's normal, whatever's acceptable, that's okay. If it's legal, it's okay, right? Even if we don't think it should be legal, well, it's legal, so what can we do about it? Well, those kind of things happen. The countries and empires, they rise, and they have certain values, and they might be bad, they might be good, but that's just the way it is. And then they fall, and then another one rises. Well, this has been going on for far too long. Things needed to change. And so what we're going to do is, this is the kind of the detour I'm going to take. We're going to go back to the Christmas story, and look how the Christmas story shows us an upside-down way of thinking. And then we'll kind of look at Revelation 17 again just for a minute at the end. But in Luke chapter 1, this was the beginning of the Christmas story. It says this: "In the sixth month, God sent the angel Gabriel to Nazareth, a town in Galilee, to a virgin pledged to be married to a man named Joseph, a descendant of David. The virgin's name was Mary. The angel went to her and said, 'Greetings, you who are highly favored. The Lord is with you.' Mary was greatly troubled at his words and wondered what kind of greeting this might be. But the angel said to her, 'Do not be afraid, Mary. You have found favor with God. You will be with child and give birth to a son. You are to give him the name Jesus. He will be great and will be called the Son of the Most High. The Lord God will give him the throne of his father David, and he will reign over the house of Jacob forever. His kingdom will never end.'" This was a very upside-down way of thinking. Everything about this story, it starts with Mary. Who did the angel go to? You would think that an angel would go to someone with power, someone who had some authority or control, maybe a politician who could implement things quickly, or maybe a priest who, through religion, could change things quickly. That's not who the angel went to. You would think at the time, especially at the time, that the angel would go to a man. Women just weren't listened to back then. It's not the same as today's culture. They weren't respected. They were second-class citizens. May as well went to a small child. I mean, Mary was probably a teenager and a woman. It just didn't make sense. Things were about to change. Things continue to change through the story. The angel said, "You will give birth to a son. He will be great. The throne of his father David. His kingdom will never end." Well, this time, the Jews were oppressed. They weren't necessarily slaves, but they had been in a bad situation for a long time. Their land was occupied by Roman soldiers, and the Roman-appointed government or officials, they let them live a certain way, but only if they did it their way, only if they paid tax and they bowed to Roman authority. They weren't necessarily slaves, but they were oppressed. They were held in captivity. They didn't have freedom. They were economically oppressed. There wasn't a middle class, and there were a small group of wealthy religious people, and some of the religious people weren't nice to the other religious people, but that's just the way it was. But for the most part, it was Rome. Rome was keeping them in captivity. People had been dreaming of freedom, and then suddenly there's this angel. There's a message. Behind closed doors, a messenger comes and says, "There's someone coming. He's going to free you." He's going to be your deliverer. There's going to be a throne and a kingdom that will never end. That's treason. If someone hears about this, everyone involved is going to be executed. The angel's talking about setting people free. We can't really appreciate the meaning of the first Christmas without realizing that it was in a place of oppression, that there was more to the story than even what we would imagine. If we tried to put the story in our situation right now, it just doesn't really work the same way. But we also know that there's oppression now in the world, and that helps us to appreciate Christmas even more. I think of oppressed countries, oppressive countries and governments and even people in the United States. There may be people who are oppressed in certain ways that I can't understand. What I do see, even around here, is people who are oppressed through consumerism and materialism. It's part of our culture. It's not illegal. It's not necessarily even wrong. I mean, no one will look at it and say it's wrong. If you looked at our culture, you would say, yeah, there's nothing wrong with materialism. It's just keeping up with people and being in the know and being a part of things. And we just make it, it's this rise. And I think it might be moving us away from God in some way. And we have to consider that, because anything that keeps us from God, no matter how big or small, no matter how bad it might look on the surface, or even if it looks good, if it's keeping us from God, well, it's not good. Some have tried to convince us that around Christmas, the people who get the best and the biggest and the most expensive gifts, those are the ones that we want. And if you don't do that for people, then you're not showing how much you really love them. There was this trend. Has anyone ever heard of or seen an upside-down Christmas tree? Yeah, it's not big. Same person for service, thanks. This actually was a trend in the 8th century, and then again in the 19th century, and then in 2005 I found some parts of it where even Target had an upside-down Christmas tree. I don't think it really stuck, and I'm glad. But an upside-down Christmas tree, it's just a Christmas tree. It could be hung from a ceiling, or it could be on a stand, but instead of it going like this, it's just the other way. Narrow at the bottom and goes out. It's just what you would think. But anyway, so the tree was popular for a little while, and the advertisers tried to push it for two reasons. One, decorations. If you take the tree upside down, flip it upside down, it's not so dense, and you can see the lights better. The more you decorate it, the more you can see. But the other part of it was really tricky. Now, if you think about what's the point of a Christmas tree most of the time, it's for presents to be under it. Well, if you flip that tree upside down, you could only fit maybe 10 presents before. Now how many can you fit? You can stack them a little bit. You can move it out a little bit. It was to try to sell more. I'm glad it really didn't stick, but it was deceiving. We've been taken captive by a system that says we need to shop more and spend more and in order to have a better Christmas. The one holiday that fights oppression, I mean, from the very beginning, and even the culture around us tries to take that from us. One survey says that 45% of Americans would rather skip Christmas just because of the financial situation that it puts them in. And when someone puts you in a situation that you don't want to be in, you're held captive. That was what was going on in Rome. A little bit different situation, but still, captivity. And we say that Christmas is joy and it's about love and peace. What about justice? It's about the lowly being lifted up, the hungry being fed, the oppressed being set free. Even as recently as the 1980s, so like 10 years ago, 15 years ago, I know, isn't that 1980, 40 years ago, but that's still not that long ago, really. In the 1980s, the government of Guatemala outlawed Mary's song. People were not permitted to read or speak it in public because it was so threatening to those in power. If the poor began to believe that someone noticed them, If they begin to imagine a society in which their needs would be met and their dignity restored, there'd be a revolution. When the angel spoke those words to Mary, it meant at last God was acting on Israel's behalf. When Mary burst into song, she sang about a world set right. The world flips things upside down. Christmas could be, it just might be, the time that things could be flipped back. We get pushed back, though. But Christmas lets us remember how Jesus came. And ultimately, that's we know it's about his birthday. That's the celebration. But how did he come? He came kind of quiet, under the radar. I mean, he was hidden. He even had to leave his home. He had to leave his home. His parents had to leave to hide him. And for 30 years, no one really knew he was here. They knew Jesus of Nazareth, but not Jesus as the Son of God. And then all of a sudden, he changes the world. He spent most of his time, even when he was performing miracles and healing the sick, he said, guys, don't tell anyone yet until the appointed time. Let's keep this on the down low. He left the whole thing in the hands of who? Fishermen? Tax collectors? Women? About 100 people, 120 people maybe. He told them to take the message to the streets, and in a generation, everything that was upside down was flipped up or flipped right side up. And he continued to do that. But just like in Revelation, we see that generation after generation, things continue to be flipped based off of the culture around them. We have to keep flipping it back up the way it's supposed to be. Author Gary Thomas, he said, thinking about eternity helps us retrieve perspective. And that's what this is all about, the upside-down perspective becoming right-side-up. He said, I'm reminded of this every year when I figure my taxes. During the year, I rejoice at the paychecks and extra income, and sometimes I flinch when I read out the tithe and offering. I do my best to be a joyful giver, but I confess it's not always easy, especially when there are other perceived needs and wants. But at the end of the year, however, all of that changes. As I'm figuring out my tax liability, I wince at every source of income and rejoice with every tithe and offering check that I had written throughout the year. More income means more tax, but every offering and tithe means less tax. Everything is turned upside down, or perhaps more appropriately, right side up. I suspect Judgment Day will be like that. I share that story because we're almost to the end of the year. So if you want to write a big check for a tax break, feel free when we get to the offering time. No, you actually could do that, but I was just making a joke there. Anyway, I'm just not funny today. That's all right. It was Thursday, and then I got tired. Yesterday was a long day, but it'll come back next year. The thing is, sometimes we live as if Jesus didn't flip things upside down. Revelation makes it very clear, especially in chapter 17, that we will all eventually realize and understand more clearly what Jesus was doing. See, they were astonished because really what he's trying to say is sin looked good. God looked bad, or at least looked weak. If you look at the Christmas story, Jesus, Mary, Joseph, Nazareth, all things that looked bad, looked weak, looked like, what's going on? This isn't a revolution. This isn't power. This is just something that should never be on the news or even talked about, really. But everything was flipped upside down at Jesus' birth. Will we recognize it? Will we really live this way? On May 7th, 1915, the RMS Lusitania, a British ocean liner, was struck by a torpedo from a German submarine. The ship sank in a matter of minutes, killing 1,198 of the 1,959 passengers on board. In her book, Lusitania, an Epic Tragedy, author Diana Preston records the observations of a passenger who actually was on that ship and survived, Charles Laureate. As the ship was sinking, and as Laureate looked around to see who needed life jackets, he noticed that among the crowds now pouring on deck, nearly everyone who passed by him was wearing a life jacket, but they had it on incorrectly. In a panic, one man had thrust one arm through the armhole and his head through the other. Others rushed past wearing them upside down. No one had read the neat little signs around the ship telling them how to put the life jackets on. And so Laureate tried to help, but some thought he was trying to take their life jackets from them and fled in terror. Preston continues, dead and drowning people were dotting the sea like seagulls. Many bodies were floating upside down because people had put their life jackets on the wrong way up, so their heads were pushed underwater. Laureate tried to help. They thought he was trying to take their life jackets. Do we listen to the messengers? Do we listen to the people who are trying to help us make the right decision, to help us towards God? I'd like to think I do. I don't know if I always get it right. Sometimes I might say, well, you don't know what you're talking about, or you're just crazy. I don't usually say that out loud, but I might think it. I think we all could. We may not realize the importance of seeing things differently, but we need to get it right. We need to consider what Jesus meant at the beginning of the Sermon on the Mount. There's this little section we call the Beatitudes. And just listen to some of the wording here. It just sounds crazy. This is upside down thinking. Blessed are the poor in spirit, for theirs is the kingdom of heaven. Blessed are those who mourn, for they will be comforted. Blessed are the meek, for they will inherit the earth. Blessed are those who hunger and thirst for righteousness, for they will be filled. Blessed are the merciful, for they will be shown mercy. Blessed are the pure in heart, for they will see God. Blessed are the peacemakers, for they will be called children of God. Blessed are those who are persecuted because of righteousness, for theirs is the kingdom of heaven. Does any of these things make sense? Well, of course they do when we look through the scriptures and the stories and we understand what God's done for us. But if I just go and read these to my friends who maybe don't attend church or don't study the Bible, I got to explain this a little bit better. We can't just share little parts of it, but this is a new way of thinking. It's not new, but new to a lot of people. This is an upside-down way of thinking. That's what Christmas does. I want to finish with one thought before we go into communion. I have to say, I don't think I made this up. I think someone in here did a communion meditation or spoke and said something, and I really liked it, and I wish I could remember who said it, because I would either have you come up and say it again, or at least I would give you credit for it. But I know I heard that in here. So anyway, we're going to take communion in just a minute. You'll have a chance to leave your offering and communication card if you want to help out, or if you have a prayer request, or if you're visiting, anything like that. Just drop that in the offering plate when we do this in just a second. But this idea, this upside-down thinking, I mean, really think about what our religion's based on. I mean, not what I said about Christmas or some of the ways that we can see how to apply it, but what's the foundation of our faith? Well, in every other way of life, the president, we pay people to risk their lives for him. A king, people are there to protect a king and give their lives if needed. A god, the God who made us, dies for us. That doesn't even make sense. The person at the top's the one protected, yet the person at the top, the creator of everything, the giver of life, says, no, I'm not asking you to die for me. I'm going to die for you. That's the upside down thinking of our faith. So when we take communion, we remember this is a reminder, but this is a gift, and this is a revolution, a change of the way that anyone else thinks that our Father, our God, would die for us. So as we take communion, remember this thinking, and then let it flow through your life. Let it change the way you think about other things of power and justice and the American dream. And what does that look like when you think the way that God thinks, which is really hard to do, when you live the way that Jesus lived? What does that look like in our lives? Let's pray. Father, I thank you that you showed us what this looks like throughout the Bible, throughout the different letters and the Gospels. We see Babylon, we see deception, we see Satan trying to guide us away from you. But throughout the same story, we see people overcoming because of what you've done. We see what power looks like, that you can't be defeated. And we see what love looks like. We saw it through Jesus, through his life, serving others, laying down his life for his friends, for enemies as well. And we see it through the cross. And so I pray that our hearts and minds would be transformed, that we would be renewed, and so that when we live our day-to-day lives, it's more about giving and loving and changing the world to so that it would be more like what you want it to be. We thank you for the hope that we have in eternity, that even when we fail in this life, that you have not failed us. And you have given us this hope through your Son. And we are so thankful for Jesus. And it's his name we pray.